Right now, US GDP growth is just completely stalling out. Inflation is stuck, and interest rates are, well, they're brutal.
Yeah, they really are.
By all textbook logic, commercial real estate should be completely frozen right now. But an open-air retail mall in California just sold for over $500 million.
$500 million.
Yeah, and Texas is like quite literally running out of space to put grocery stores. So, welcome to this deep dive. I am your host, and today we are looking at an absolutely wild 8-day window of market data from mid-March 2026.
It is a massive stack of reports, for sure.
It really is. And this deep dive is brought to you by Eureka Business Group. Our mission today is to cut through the noise of all these reports to give you, the listener, a clear, actionable picture of the market. We're going to figure out why retail is defying economic gravity, and
Right.
specifically how the Dallas-Fort Worth market is cementing its status as just an absolute powerhouse. Because when the market gets this complex, you need a boots-on-the-ground authority to guide you. And for commercial real estate in the DFW market, you know, specializing in retail, Eureka Business Group is exactly that authority.
It's a really fascinating environment to analyze right now. We're looking at a landscape where some asset classes are facing total existential distress, while others are just absorbing record capital inflows.
Right, it's night and day.
Exactly. The challenge isn't finding the data. I mean, the data is everywhere. The challenge is understanding the underlying mechanics of what that data is actually dictating about the future.
So, to understand the local retail picture, we have to start by looking at the national macroeconomic weather, basically.
Yes, the big picture.
During this specific week in March, the Federal Reserve voted 11 to 1 to hold the federal funds rate steady at 3.5 to 3.75%.
And they're only projecting one rate cut for all of 2026. Just one.
Yeah, which is tough. At the same time, we got a pretty nasty downward revision for Q4 2025 GDP, dropping it to a dismal 0.7% growth.
Yeah, 0.7 is rough.
Meanwhile, core inflation is just sitting there, stubbornly glued to 3.1%. And the immediate market reaction was severe. The 10-year Treasury hit 4.28%, sending mortgage refinance demand plunging 19% in a single week.
Wow. But before we dig into the underlying math of those numbers, we do need to address the very real geopolitical drivers pushing these metrics around.
Yeah, we have to touch on that.
Because the material we're analyzing explicitly ties these macroeconomic conditions to highly politically charged events, specifically the ongoing U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict.
Right, which recently pushed Brent crude oil surging toward $119 a barrel.
Exactly. We're also looking at the economic fallout from the Trump administration's One Big Beautiful Bill Act,
Right.
or OBBA,
Right, the OBBBA.
which is driving tariff expectations and, potential tax code changes, alongside new executive orders aimed at deregulating housing.
Okay, I should jump in here and clearly state to you, the listener, that we are taking absolutely no political sides here.
None at all.
Neither left-wing nor right-wing. We are strictly and impartially reporting the economic impacts and the market mechanics exactly as they're described in the original material.
That is an important distinction, because we are solely focused on how these events affect the math of commercial real estate.
Right.
And right now, the math says we have high oil prices driving up operating expenses, sticky inflation keeping the Fed hawkish, and consequently, very high borrowing costs.
Which brings us to a massive looming problem in the industry, the $936 billion maturity wall hitting in 2026.
Yeah, almost $1 trillion.
It's staggering. This isn't just a big number, it's a structural crisis for thousands of property owners.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that maturity wall is the critical mechanism dictating almost everything else we're going to talk about today.
Right.
Let's walk through exactly how this works. Say you bought a commercial property 5 to 10 years ago.
Okay.
You likely locked in an interest rate somewhere below 4%. Your building generates a 5% yield, so your debt is cheaper than your income. You're making money.
Make some.
But now, in 2026, that loan is expiring.
Hmm.
Because the Fed is holding rates high and the 10-year Treasury is elevated, you have to refinance that exact same property. But your replacement debt is now going to cost you 6.5% or higher.
Ouch.
And your property's yield hasn't magically doubled to compensate.
Okay, let's unpack this. So you enter a state of negative leverage. The cost of carrying the debt is suddenly higher than the net operating income the property actually produces.
Precisely.
The building is essentially eating its own equity. I mean, it's like trying to refinance your home mortgage, but because the new interest rate is so high, your monthly payment doubles, wiping out your entire disposable income.
That's a perfect analogy.
And this isn't happening in a vacuum. Your property insurance has doubled, your energy costs are spiking because oil is at $119 a barrel and capital is just drying up. If you are an owner caught in that trap, what do you even do?
Well, if you can't inject fresh equity to pay down the principal, you either hand the keys back to the lender or you sell at a massive discount. This dynamic is violently separating the market into winners and losers. And the sector bearing the absolute brunt of this negative leverage environment is the office sector.
The sheer scale of the distress in office space right now is just staggering. CMBS, commercial mortgage-backed securities, delinquency rates for office space hit a record 12.3% in January.
12.3%.
Yeah. To put that in perspective, that far exceeds the peak distress we saw during the 2008 financial crisis.
It really does.
We're seeing major real estate investment trusts just capitulate. Office Properties Income Trust, or OPI, just entered Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Wow.
They reached an agreement with creditors to slash $700 million in debt. And in exchange, they're essentially handing over control of their entire portfolio. That's 17.3 million square feet of mostly Class B office space.
And that phrase, Class B office space, is the key to understanding the terminal risk in this sector. A report from DeepKey recently warned that older, energy-inefficient buildings are basically facing obsolescence.
Oh, for sure.
When oil is at $119 a barrel, the operating expenses to heat, cool, and light, a 30-year-old office building just explode.
Yeah, tenants don't want to pay high rents for an outdated space.
Exactly. And landlords in a negative leverage trap don't have the capital to modernize the HVAC systems or add amenities.
Yeah.
So the building spirals downward. But, you know, the capital that used to fund those office buildings hasn't just vanished.
Right. It had to go somewhere.
It has fundamentally pivoted to a new necessity.
Yeah, we're living in an economy where developers are literally spending more money building houses for servers than houses for humans.
It's wild.
For the very first time in history, U.S. construction spending on data centers has surpassed spending on office buildings. In December, developers poured $3.57 billion into data centers, compared to $3.49 billion for offices.
The shift is happening so fast.
The demand for artificial intelligence and cloud computing infrastructure is so insatiable that DHL Supply Chain is taking traditional industrial warehouses and retrofitting them with heavy power infrastructure just to supply the data center boom.
This is where we see the emergence of a completely new asset class, which is power-ready land.
Power-ready land.
Yeah. You cannot simply drop an AI server farm onto any vacant lot. It requires massive, specialized connectivity to the electrical grid.
Right. The power requirements are insane.
Capital is fleeing the traditional office sector and rushing toward infrastructure that can support the massive amounts of electricity required to run modern digital economies. The real estate itself is almost secondary to the power capacity of the site.
Okay, but I want to push back a little on this overarching death of the office narrative.
Okay, let's.
Because if we look closely at the leasing data, it's not that all offices are dying. There is a massive flight to quality happening. While Class B buildings are going bankrupt, JP Morgan just signed a massive 250,000 square foot lease to anchor the South Station Tower in Boston.
That's a huge deal.
And even more incredibly, the newly formed Texas Stock Exchange, which has hundreds of millions in backing from Wall Street, is eyeing the $433 million Bank of America Tower in Uptown Dallas for its headquarters.
Right.
That building is going to be 30 stories of ultra-premium Class AA space. Why are companies signing these massive leases if the office is dead?
Well, because the office isn't dead, it has become a polarized tool. We're seeing a severe bifurcation. Commodity, run-of-the-mill office space where people just go to sit at a desk and answer emails is facing that terminal risk.
Yeah.
But trophy assets, you know, brand new, highly amenitized, energy-efficient buildings in prime locations, they are thriving.
People want to be there.
Top-tier companies are using these Class AA spaces as recruitment and retention tools to get talent back in the room. The capital markets are surgically separating the winners from the losers based entirely on asset quality.
So if institutional capital is terrified of the commodity office sector and data center development is bottlenecked by power grid availability, that investment capital still has to go somewhere.
Exactly.
It needs a safe harbor that can act as a hedge against that sticky 3.1% inflation we just talked about. And surprisingly, it's finding that safety in grocery aisles and strip malls.
The resilience of the retail sector under these high-interest, high-inflation conditions is remarkable.
It really is.
In a market where large transactions are supposed to be frozen by those 6.5% borrowing costs we discussed, we are seeing absolute blockbuster retail deals.
Huge deals.
A joint venture just acquired the Victoria Gardens Open Air Mall in California for $530 million.
Wow.
Federal Realty dropped $72.3 million on a grocery-anchored center in Maryland. And Apollo Global just committed a staggering $1 billion for a retail joint venture with Realty Income.
Wait, $530 million for an open-air mall?
Yeah.
In a market where borrowing costs are sitting near 6%, how does the math on that even pencil out for the buyer without falling into the negative leverage trap we just discussed? I mean, I know it generates over $1,100 per square foot in retail sales, making it the fifth busiest open-air shopping center in the country. But still, $500 million is a massive price tag.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that it pencils out because of the mechanism of inflation hedging. Retail leases often include what's called percentage rent,
okay,
where the landlord gets a cut of the tenant's gross sales above a certain threshold, or they have automatic annual escalations tied to the consumer price index.
Oh, I see.
So when inflation runs hot, the prices of the goods sold in those stores go up, the tenant's gross revenue goes up, and therefore the landlord's net operating income goes up.
That's brilliant.
Institutional capital, like that billion-dollar Apollo fund, looks at grocery-anchored centers and sees incredibly stable necessity-based cash flow that actually grows alongside inflation. But people still need groceries, regardless of what the 10-year treasury is doing.
So what does this all mean for the consumer? I mean, that necessity aspect explains so much of the shifting retail footprints we are seeing. It's a massive barbell effect.
Yeah, the barbell effect is very real right now.
On one end, consumers are fleeing to extreme value. Ross Stores is opening 110 new locations this year. Academy Sports is opening 24 new massive big box stores.
And Family Dollar is testing extra small formats specifically to squeeze into high density urban markets where land costs are too high for traditional footprints.
Right. And on the other end of the barbell, consumers are fleeing to experiences. The U.S. now has more spas and gyms than traditional retail stores.
That's a crazy statistic.
Experiential retail is booming so hard that Shein is hosting a massive multi-day festival-themed pop-up on Melrose Avenue in L.A. just to build brand engagement.
This directly answers the apparent contradiction in consumer spending behavior. On paper, consumers are facing an oil shock, tariffs, and a high cost of living, which should mean a massive pullback.
Yeah, you'd think so.
But consumer spending isn't disappearing, it's recalibrating. They are cutting back on mid-tier discretionary goods, but they're still heavily funding necessity, deep discount value, and high engagement experiences.
Like Shein.
This is why you see Gen Z using the mall as a social hub again, rather than just a place to buy a shirt. Retail real estate that adapts to those specific consumer demands is insulated from the broader macroeconomic storms.
Which brings us perfectly to how this plays out in the real world, specifically in your backyard.
Yes.
We've mapped out the macro squeeze, we've seen capital flee the office sector, and we've established why retail is the ultimate inflation hedge. Now we're bringing all of these mechanics directly to the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
DFW is a prime example.
Because fulfilling our mission for Eureka Business Group means showing you exactly why DFW is the epicenter of this retail resilience.
The data coming out of Texas, and DFW specifically, is exceptional.
Mm.
Texas retail markets have hit record occupancy for the third consecutive year.
3 years in a row.
The underlying mechanism here is a massive supply and demand imbalance. You have relentless population growth and strong consumer spending driving demand.
Right.
But there has been very limited new multi-tenant retail construction over the last few years because construction costs and interest rates are simply too high for developers to break ground speculatively.
That tight supply leads to my absolute favorite statistic from this entire stack of reports.
Let's hear it.
Out of the 2.4 million square feet of new retail space built in DFW in 2025, more than 80% of it was occupied by grocers. 80%.
It's unbelievable.
We're talking H-E-B, Kroger, Sprouts, and Walmart gobbling up almost all of the new supply before it even hits the open market. And institutional money knows exactly how valuable this is.
Oh, they know.
Dallas-based Younger Partners just bought the Presidio Junction retail portfolio in North Fort Worth. It's a 375,000 square foot center anchored by Target and Costco, and it is 100% leased.
A huge asset.
They managed to secure a $113.7 million loan for it, which proves that lenders who are terrified of office buildings will still happily write massive checks for the right DFW retail assets.
It's crucial to contextualize that strength because DFW is certainly not immune to the broader macro squeeze. We can look at the recent Windmass foreclosure on 5 Dallas apartment complexes as proof of that.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
The multifamily sector in the Sun Belt is dealing with an oversupply of new construction colliding head-on with those high refinancing rates. But retail in DFW operates on a completely different fundamental reality.
Right.
Because the supply is so incredibly tight and the necessity-based tenant mix is so strong, retail cap rates in the region have stabilized near 6.8%. It's a highly functioning, highly liquid market compared to almost every other commercial asset class right now.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. It's not just about buying fully leased grocery-anchored centers. It's about the opportunities created by structural disruption.
Absolutely.
CoStar recently reported that Nordstrom is closing a location at the Galleria Dallas that it has operated for decades. Now, the old outdated narrative would say, oh no, another mall anchor is dying.
Right.
But if you understand the mechanics of retail commercial real estate today, you look at that and say, look at that massive chunk of prime, high-traffic real estate that just became available in a supply-constrained market.
Exactly. A vacant department store box is no longer viewed as a liability. It is raw material. It's the perfect candidate for the exact types of experiential and necessity retail that capital is desperate to acquire.
Yeah.
But repositioning a multi-level department store is incredibly complex. You can't just slap a fresh coat of paint on it and lease it to a luxury fitness club or a specialty grocer.
Right. You have to completely deconstruct the mechanics of the building. You have to carve up the centralized HVAC systems so multiple tenants can control their own climate.
Yes.
You have to analyze the parking ratios because a high-intensity gym generates vastly different traffic turnover than a traditional department store.
And zoning.
Exactly. You have to navigate zoning changes. If you want to bring in medical or service-based tenants, you are taking a monolith and turning it into a dynamic multi-tenant ecosystem. And executing that kind of vision requires an incredible amount of deep, localized market intelligence.
It really does.
You have to know the dirt, you have to know the traffic patterns, and you have to know exactly what the local demographic needs. This is why you need a specialist. And that is exactly where Eureka Business Group comes in.
That's right.
Navigating these localized, complex DFW retail dynamics requires a boots-on-the-ground authority who understands the underwriting realities of this specific market.
That is the ultimate takeaway for anyone deploying capital right now. The macro environment is unforgiving. If you make a mistake in underwriting your debt, or if you misjudge the terminal risk of an asset, the negative leverage will wipe out your equity.
Yeah, it's brutal.
But if you have the specialized knowledge to identify value in supply-constrained markets like DFW retail, the returns are exceptionally durable.
Let's quickly retrace the path we just took because we covered a lot of ground. We started with the macroeconomic math, you know, stubborn inflation, elevated treasuries, and a $936 billion maturity wall creating a negative leverage trap.
The big squeeze.
We saw how that math is accelerating the death of commodity class B office space while simultaneously fueling a multi-billion dollar pivot toward data centers and power-ready land.
Yep.
But the ultimate survivor, the asset class providing an inflation hedge and absorbing institutional capital, is retail. And nowhere is that retail dominance more apparent or more supply constrained than in the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
It's the sweet spot.
We curated this deep dive to put you ahead of the curve, to help you understand the mechanics driving the headlines. And that is courtesy of Eureka Business Group, the premier authority in DFW retail commercial real estate.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over as you look at the evolving landscape. We discussed the massive bottleneck power demands of data centers, and we discussed the incredible resilience of neighborhood grocery-anchored retail.
Right.
As the electrical grid gets tighter and premium land becomes more scarce in major metros, how long until we see developers merging these two distinct winners?
Oh, wow. That's an idea.
Imagine a mixed-use development where your local grocery center and experiential retail hub literally share a power microgrid and a real estate footprint with an edge computing data center. The convergence of high-capacity digital infrastructure and high-traffic physical necessity might just be the next great frontier in commercial real estate.
That is an absolutely fascinating vision of the future and definitely something to watch for in the coming years. Thank you for joining us today and letting us break down the mechanics of the market for you. We will catch you on the next deep dive.